Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I, of course, am Scott McNulty, joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Boo!
Ah!
Did I scare you?
You did. This is a tense episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which we're going to talk about Season 1, Episode 9, All Those Who Wander.
All Those Who Wander. I didn't get the reference this time.
Is it dialogue in the episode?
Apparently. I don't know.
I don't think they say anything. I think it's referring to there are many things that are wandering in this episode. There are some little baby Gorn. There are some cadets who are trying to find their place in life.
Not all those who wander are lost. I guess that is a Tolkien quote. So
there you go. That is the reference.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to start, if I could, citing my theory from the last couple of weeks that Hemmer kind of was a late addition, and say, now I'm starting to wonder if they broke the season and said, we could have this dramatic thing where we kill somebody off, but who will it be? I don't want to kill any of the people off that we've already cast. Why don't we create a new character? And then we'll backfill him into other episodes, and then we'll kill him.
And then we'll kill him, yes. R.I.P. Hemmer.
Yeah.
Marisa and I were watching this together, and she turned to me and said, oh no, are we going to lose Hemmer as well? And I said, no. And then, yes,
yeah,
we do, in fact. Which is surprising. I was, because as soon as Duke was promoted to lieutenant, I thought, well, he's dying.
He's going to die, yeah. That was clear.
And I was like, okay, that's our body count is Duke and the other cadet.
Yes, the other cadet we've never heard of.
And who valiantly dies under a table.
She died doing what she loved. died as she lived, cowering under a table, steamrolled by a baby Gorn.
The worst, those baby Gorns. But I was quite surprised that Hemmer died. Even after he got splashed with the Gorn venom, it was surprising.
Yeah, I mean, the Gorn venom thing, I thought, oh, he's going to be infected or something. But I really thought that they were going to do a thing where they saved him at the end, and they didn't.
Nope, he jumps off the ship, basically.
Yeah, he doesn't let them try to save him even. He's like, nope.
I am sacrificing myself.
I am out of here.
Well, and that's a recurring theme in Star Trek, is that, you know, the good of the many outweigh the good of the few, and all that self-sacrifice is very important. You have to do what the right thing is for the situation. So I thought that was all good and very surprising. So what did you think of the episode overall, Jason?
Scott, this was my favorite episode of the season by a lot. Mm-hmm. By a lot. By a lot, lot. Yes?
I agree, even though usually I don't like scary things. But this episode was so good and used the scares, I thought, well, to build tension as you're supposed to, and not just, you know, a lot of jump scares. Although there were a couple of jump cut scares. There were a couple of those too. But, you know, used judiciously, I thought they were good.
Yeah, this is, I mean, obviously it's a different kind of episode. It's an action episode, although it's still got a lot of character stuff. They are building a lot of things. I think it feels very much like a season finale almost, which it's not. It's the penultimate episode. But, you know, I think that they have things they want to deal with in episode 10. And that so they needed to do some things in episode 9 with some of these other characters. And so, like, it is revealed now, essentially, that, you know, we've been watching Uhura's arc of understanding where she belongs. And it turns out that it really is Hemmer who kind of shows her the way there. And I like that about it. I like a lot of the character moments. You know, the Spock and Chapel, you get that thing of, like, he gets yelled at by Sam Kirk, who's doing a very Dr. Yes. McCoy almost, your pointy-eared computer kind of thing, while also doing the guy from Aliens going, game over, man, game over, they're going to kill us all.
That's true.
I think you got to have somebody like that in an episode or movie like this. You need to have that person who's kind of losing it. Mm-hmm. And I saw several people say, like, Pike should really tell Kirk to snap it out of it, right? And I'm like, okay, either, I mean, they obviously have an existing relationship, so either Pike has just learned to deal with it, or he's just not gonna deal with it. Either way, but
so, like, the Gorn will deal with that.
But having you putting characters under pressure, which is always good. You've got the claustrophobic nature of being in this familiar looking ship, right? Because it's a Starfleet ship that they can redress the existing Enterprise sets for this. Yes. Other
uses the same equipment as a Constitution class.
And for the if anybody out there hasn't seen TOS and is like, hey, this is kind of cheap. It's like, please watch all the I can't even begin to list the TOS episodes that just redress the Enterprise as a
please
different
watch
ship.
Any TOS episode.
I mean, literally, you know, you could go to The Ultimate Computer and the one where they've got that planet that's really crowded, and there's a Doomsday Machine and the Tholian Web, and like, I mean, they double I said The Ultimate Computer. They double the Enterprise for like, I mean, every other ship looks exactly like the Enterprise in the original series. So they're kind of doing a nod to it. They say this is not quite the same. It uses some of the same parts, but it's faster and smaller and whatever. And that's all fine. But like that's great because we know the ship because it's a Starfleet ship. It's basically the Enterprise, and it's all messed up. And there's monsters, and the monsters are kind of like Alien and kind of like Predator. And I really like the idea that what they do is they lay their eggs in people, which they set up with La'an a while ago. And what happens is they all hatch, and then they fight until one of them is supreme. And that's how you get a ruthless adult predator is out
an
of that.
Alpha Gorn.
Super effective. Their AR wall or VR wall that they've got made that icy outside really effective too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it maintained the tension throughout in a way that I was really kind of raptly attentive to this episode in a way that I haven't been, not that I haven't been paying attention to the other episodes, but like this one was super compelling. Like I felt like the most compelled by this of any of the nine. So it's tops for me.
I agree. I mean, it really felt like, even though we know what characters ultimately survive, it felt like they were all in peril. And then everyone who doesn't ultimately survive dies. But, you know, hey, you can't kill off Captain Pike on a ship by little baby Gorn because he survives. We know that.
Yeah.
He knows that, which is interesting that didn't really come up his kind of, I mean, there's a lot in this episode. So, but he did that kind of him knowing his future doesn't come up at any point.
For anybody who's seen that was sort of what I was getting out of next week. They've got to do other things. So they're doing these things this week because if anybody watched the Ready Room and the clip from that, it is very clear that one of the things at least that next week is about is again, addressing the fact that Pike knows his future. And that is this element that I think they want to bring back and maybe even consider the core character element of the lead of the show. And so in episode 10, they're going to address it again. But because I agree, I feel like he hasn't had this moment where he's like, do I even behave like I'm afraid of death?
Should just walk up to that Gorn and smack it. You know, it's not going to kill you.
It's not because I've seen my future. So... I guess we'll get there, but here we do get a lot of the other stuff, and we get the poor dumb lieutenant. It is funny that they make him like do something dumb, and everybody rolls their eyes at him before they have him horribly murdered. So it's like, yeah, did he deserve that? No, he still really didn't deserve it. But oh well,
he made a mistake. He doesn't need to be devoured by baby Gorn.
Baby Gorn, yeah, but yeah,
it's not good.
It was. We got the. Also, after, you know, getting to episode 9, I'm starting to really love the almost quirky way that Pike and his team interact with he has the big like brunch basically that's for the cadets and cadets. Also the promotion of the guy. And then like when they get the secret, I really like it. It's like the priority one. We got to do this. And like, aren't we already on a priority one? It's like, well, he's like, well, get him in here. And then like he's saying to Lon, no, you know, I'm gonna still serve you food here. And Una's like, have the bacon. And I thought that was really fun because, again, taking it back to TOS. I mean, yeah, Picard had his tea Earl Grey hot, right? But TOS, there were so many things that were like in the mess hall. There were scenes in the mess hall when they're having coffee and having their food cubes and all of that. So to have this thing where it's like Pike wants to be your dad and he's going to cook for you, but they're like conducting business while doing that. I like the whole, it's very, it's a weird kind of quirky personal tone of it, and I like it. I enjoy that that we're like, Pike, this is how he does things, instead of like Picard would be like, we'll be in the briefing room and we'll all just sit there and stare at each other and talk about the thing, and Pike's like, no, just come to my quarters and I've got some bacon and eggs here for you. That's Pike.
I'll feed you. And he makes the station wagon joke, so kind of putting hanging a lantern
on
he's space dad. Their space dad. Yeah.
I mean, what is a captain but a space dad, though, really? I mean, he's just leaning into it.
And many different kinds of father figures. Picard is the stern taskmaster that you don't want to disappoint, but you know you will anyway, and so then you try even harder. And Pike is the one that's like, let me make you some waffles and we'll talk about what troubles you.
Yeah, that's right. Little Space Station K7, which we don't see. But
I was looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I like the idea, too, that I think a lot of Star Trek episodes, there'd be some sort of, you know, blah, 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 that would prevent the ship from beaming down more people or sending down more people to isolate the people who are on the surface. And in this episode, they don't even go there. They say, you know, we have to do these two things. And Pike's like, it's fine. You go do that and come back for us. And it's like, okay, the D&D players know, don't split the party.
Yeah, don't split. That's what I was thinking. Don't split the party, Pike.
They basically say that, but like Pike's, yeah. We'll do it. It'll be fine. And as a result, it's this thing where they you know, the Enterprise isn't going to be back for 2 days or whatever it is, and they're in this horrible situation, and that's just how it is. And again, it's a little contrived, but they would have contrived it some other way too. So I kind of prefer the idea that we can do both of these things. We just have to split up.
Well, and they did mention that they couldn't beam down, which is why they had to.
Yeah.
Send the Enterprise off. So they do a little.
Yeah, no communications and can't beam down.
Can't beam. So we can't, because, you know, one would imagine they would just beam down and then Enterprise would hang out for a couple hours and then beam them up and leave.
Well, and if Enterprise stays there, what happens, right? They can't hear from them.
Right.
And they can't beam down. So do they just like, we'll just keep sending shuttlecraft down every 6 hours to see what's going on? Like, you know. Until they're all gone.
Well, they don't have a vehicle replicator like they do
in Discovery.
Prodigy also.
And Prodigy.
Spoilers for Prodigy. Yeah, there's a vehicle replicator.
There's a vehicle in Prodigy. Replicator. That's right. It's Prodigy. They can replicate a shuttlecraft if they want to.
Mm-hmm. I thought the setup was good and very effective. And like you said, putting it on this planet where it's super cold out, so they have to stay in the ship, like they are stuck in there with the Gorn, because the obvious thing, and this is what Sam Kirk says, is like, let's go,
let's get out of here.
And you think, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But the carefully set up line where Spock says, oh, in 6 hours there's going to be a big ice storm, so
right, because they do decide at some point that they should just retreat to the shuttlecraft and they can't go outside at that point, so now they're really stuck inside with the Gorn. Because otherwise it's really one of those moments of like, well, Starfleet says we need to retrieve this ship, so we're all going to die here in order to save this ship.
Save the ship. No.
You know, so that Starfleet can save some money on its shipbuilding budget. But it's you know, at that point, it really is that they're trapped there. And I mean, that's it's your horror movie contrivance that you have to have, because you want to put those people in those isolated circumstances where they're stuck and they're kind of bumping up against each other. And I really liked the scene with Chapel up on the bed with the force field.
Yes.
Speaking of which, talking about that whole thing, the idea I love how evocative it is that, like, look, we just beamed up these three people who were survivors, or we got these three people who were survivors, and the one guy tried to blow himself up because he had Gorn babies in him, and, you know, we crashed, and if you're hearing this, we're all dead. That's like, it's super creepy. And then when they find the two survivors, I really love that it's the weird blue alien who... Buckley, his nickname, who they can't understand, and he looks great. He's a really cool looking alien who says weird stuff that we don't understand. Sadly, he dies, but maybe we'll see more Buckleys. They built the costume right so they could do another Buckley down the road. I liked him. He's got a stick and he's like, and they're like, oh, well, but process of elimination. Uhura steps forward and is like, he's obviously protecting the human that we scanned, so let's put our guns down. I thought that was really great. He's protecting this little girl, and we never hear from him, but we know that he's protecting the little girl. And then the little girl is, you know, running away and hiding in the coldest part of the ship because she knows the Gorn don't like it. It's all like, I thought that whole portion of the story was really good, and we get a lot of payoff for Lan and her history with the Gorn here, talking to the little girl, and at the end of the episode, surprisingly taking a leave of absence, which I think is just is literally a character thing going into season two to have her come back and have her maybe have some character, some realizations about herself in doing that. I mean, it felt like they're writing her off. I don't think they're writing her off. I think it's just that we're at the end of the season, so we can have her go away and then have her come back in the beginning of season two and have a story about how she's changed.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right about that. And I was also surprised that she was taking a leave of absence. So
I mean, it shows her character's progression, right? I think one of the things that Una has been working on with her, right, is like to kind of understand who she is and why she's reacted the way she has to her traumatic incident as a child. And so seeing it reflected in this other child, it gives her this opportunity to see if she can save this girl who's in the same boat that she was back when she was a little girl.
And it gives them the opportunity for next season to do an episode around Lan, if they want, out in non-Federation space looking for the family and having some sort of adventure. So it opens up vistas. It makes sense for the character and opens up some storytelling opportunities if they so choose.
Yeah, that's their game, right? I mean, I think that I'm very impressed, and we're not at the end yet, but I feel like we're getting so close to the end now that we can at least say, I think they've been true to their word about every episode being standalone, and yet the characterization stuff is serialized. And I think they've done a pretty good job of it. Like all these characters who are, you know, a lot of new characters, or at least characters we haven't seen a lot before, understanding what kind of makes them tick and what their issues are, and seeing them progress. And Lan, you know, I assume is not on next week. And if that's the case, then this is like her kind of little valedictory here, which is she's going to go find where this little girl might be from, because she's a victim of the Gorn like Lan was. I like that. I think that they've done a good job across the board with these characters and sort of giving them, making them feel real and continuous and having issues they have to deal with while doing Star Trek episodes as standalones.
And giving more depth to characters that we already know, right? Like Uhura, who is, of course, an iconic Star Trek character and someone we know well later on, although still isn't given a whole lot to do later on in certainly not in TOS, and the movies flesh her out a little bit more, but an underserved character in many ways. Giving Strange New Worlds takes that opportunity and has really built made her a deeper character. I was going to say more interesting, but that's not true. I think she was always interesting. Just it gives her more depth, so now we understand how she got from, you know, kind of this uncertainty, kind of annoying uncertainty, the people around her, because she's good at everything, but she's like, I don't know if I want to be in Starfleet. And they're like, Starfleet's like your backup plan.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And she gets, you know, eventually, I might argue that, and there might be others that I'm not thinking of, but I think my favorite Uhura moment of all is when she puts Mr. Adventure in the closet in Star Trek 3. That's it's like, oh, she's super feisty, right? But I was thinking about that too, watching Celia Gooding, thinking, you know, you've really proven your worth and rotated through all the different sections and saved the Enterprise a bunch of times. And as a result, congratulations, we're going to promote you to lieutenant and you're going to run the switchboard.
Yeah. And if I had one thing I didn't like about this episode, it would be the ending, which is they show that shot of the comm station and Uhura looking at it. And I thought, come on, that's a bit heavy-handed. I don't need that. But I get what they were going for.
What I liked about it is there was no dialogue, and it was just like she's looking out and number one sitting at the bridge, and she's looking over to the comm station, and that's it. I think that made it a little bit of a lighter touch than it might have otherwise been. But yes, it's like that's what they're doing there.
Yes, I think Uhura is going to stick around.
Nurse Chapel, similarly, is a character that's not serviced very well on TOS, and here has we are seeing the source. I mean, they've really chosen to play it, I think, interestingly, is that she and Spock have a tight kind of bond and connection, but you know, she's got an unrequited thing, which is that's the story of Chapel and Spock. So to see that going on here, where she really is trying to be a good friend and mentor almost in humanity to Mr. Spock, while also kind of realizing the he'll never love you aspect of that relationship, I think is really interesting. And so that's another character who's been served really well, as opposed to Sam Kirk, who's just like, the aliens,
Well, Sam Kirk didn't do much in the original series.
He just died, really. Died is what he did in TOS.
It's so. True to his character, I think, as we know
yeah.
it.
Yeah, well, he has a line where he's like, oh, you don't want to do this, and you get aliens, and I'm like, yeah, dude, that's going to happen to you. You're 10 years out, 9 years out from having some weird alien suck on your face, and you die.
Which it makes it reasonable for him to be freaking out, because it's like, you know, he knows. Yeah, don't trust aliens, people. Mm.
Especially pancake ones.
Oh, yes, they're not good. No,
they're
bad. Don't let them fly.
That's why Pike serves waffles. They don't want to frighten people with their pancakes.
Exactly. Well, because you put them in the waffle press and you know they're dead. So otherwise, pancakes are sneaky. You never know.
So I'm super sad about Hammer.
Yes, we should talk about it. So we already talked about it. Hammer dies. Yeah. And I was... So... We don't see a whole lot of Hammer, and now we know why. But I think the show was very affected, because it affected me. I was like, Hammer. It was a surprise, obviously, and then I was sad about it. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, if you think about how much he was on screen, he was not a huge presence on screen for most of the episodes, and he was not in some of the episodes. And yet, it was still kind of like a shocking death that I was not expecting. And touching in the moment when, you know, at his little funeral, when it's like, oh yes, Hammer, and then these other two people, we're all sad about
yes.
it.
But, we'll put him in the center because he's more.
He outranks the other two, so.
Yeah, it is, to their credit, as you said, that a character who's not actually been in a lot in terms of screen time, mm-hmm. but was such a kind of a great Star Trek character, and using a race from canon, and having him be kind of grumpy but brilliant, and having him mentor Uhura and doing his magic tricks last week and all of that, and the interview with the actor who plays Hammer, he said they basically, that was the brief when he came in, which is one of the reasons why I think my theory is right. I really do think they decided they wanted to have a big death at the end of the season, and decided they could add a character and retrofit them into, you know, write him into 3 or 4 scripts and have him be, and shoot him coming on board at the beginning and having it become this thing where he was there. Seems like he was there the whole time. So that they could have that moment. And I think that's a great move and a bold move and a smart move on their part, where they're like, well, we cast everybody who we want on the show forever, and so we don't want to kill any of them off, but we could make another character and say they're part of the ensemble and then kill them off, and that would be surprising. I also, though, have to say, the problem with doing that is that you create the character and you're like, oh no, I kind of love this character. And then you got to kill him.
And they have to kill him.
And it's a problem, because, like, he's a great character, and they so to their credit, they did it. They made a great character, and then they killed him. On the other hand, he was great, and now he's gone. So, you know, I just, great performance, fun character. Wondering, you know, Bruce Horrock did a great job. He said something about, I don't know, they may have him in something else. Like, they may bring him back as some other character. Because I think it was great, and I think everybody was really sad about it, but that character was built to do this, and to have this ending. But, you know, it's tough, because that was actually a really good character. And yes, if they what we're saying is they succeeded in emotionally manipulating us into loving Hammer and then being sad when he died. So good job, I guess.
Good job, Star Trek, making me care about your characters and then killing them.
I'm reminded
I care about them more.
I'll do this in a light touch, but I'm reminded that Henry Alonso Myers worked on The Magicians, which is a great show. If you haven't watched it, highly recommend it. The first season's okay. It gets better every year. By the end, it is flying on it's rarefied air. The last three seasons of it are just kind of amazing. One of the things that happens in the Magicians, and I won't specify beyond that, is they kill off a character, and I will tell you, it is probably the best, like, use of the trauma of killing off a character that I've seen in a TV show in a long time. Like, it's not tossed off or just a little bit, like, it is a huge deal that affects everybody. And I was thinking about that when I was watching this, because, you know, the guy, one of the people who did that did this. So I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I see what you're doing here is building something in that will have ramifications and that really upsets the audience in a kind of good way, but still upsetting. So yeah, they even came up with Hemora for Hemora and Uhura. And now he's, yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah.
And I assume I have not checked, Scotty's service record on the internet, yeah. But one has to assume that season two we see Montgomery Scott join the crew.
That was my other thought. Actually, right at the beginning, is like, you know, you get Mbenga and Hemmer, and you've got people who are filling slots that other people, and I'll put out there too that that Sulu actually would be a logical character to see. Because he's in the pilot. He's in Where No Man Has Gone Before. So he was obviously on the Enterprise fairly early on. So there are a bunch of other kind of canon characters you could bring on. But yeah, Scotty is right there, right? And I don't know what, you know, how they kind of like stick that in there. But Scotty also is in Where No Man Has Gone Before. So, I wonder if that we're actually going to get a Scotty as a chief engineer, but that hasn't leaked yet, at least. So maybe they'll come up with another chief engineer, or maybe they'll do that thing that some Star Trek shows do and try to pretend that there isn't one.
You don't need an engineer for this thing.
Or Discovery, which just sort of has random people who may or may not be the chief engineer.
That's right. They all have different titles. You're not sure. They all seem to do the same thing.
Yeah, there's the Spore guy, but like but they also have a warp drive. The Spore guy doesn't do the warp drive. It's like, well, Tig Notaro does that, but she's only there like 4 episodes. So what happens to the other episodes? Well, I don't know.
Nothing breaks.
No, it's fine. She's working on it. It's just they're so busy that she can't be on the show. Anyway, I wonder about Scotty too. That's another character.
Well,
right?
And that's a, you know, they're playing around with canon, right? And so that leads me to talk about the Gorn, which is kind of set up as in Strange New Worlds as this big kind of main enemy, kind of amping up the terror. They have appeared before in, Enterprise had a Gorn, and of course,
in the Mirror
original series.
The Mirror Universe in the last, you know, whatever those were, those very much at the end of Enterprise, they had the 2-episode Mirror Universe thing where they had Gorn, and then, Arena for TOS. Right. That's it.
That is your iconic Gorn character,
and the skeleton from Star Trek Discovery season one,
And so the Gorn in the original series, if you've not watched Arena, which is a good episode to watch, although if you're expecting the same kind of Gorn you see in Strange New Worlds,
disappointed.
Yes, please tamp down those expectations.
It's a man in a lizard suit. Let's be clear. A big lizard
I read
suit.
Trek movie does a little recap of, I shouldn't say little, they do a very long, well thought out recap of each episode. And at the end of it, they posit that perhaps that Gorn in Arena is a geriatric Gorn.
That was actually my thought, is that when you become the captain of a Gorn ship, you're sort of at the end of Gorn evolution life, and you're a little bit bigger and slower, and not as you're not the warrior class at that point. You're the commanding class and the ruling class, and
you've established your dominance. You don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah, so then you're able to be slow and strong, but like, because the Gorn in Arena, again, it's just a guy in a lizard suit, but the impression you get is that he's incredibly strong and impervious, but also kind of slow.
Yes,
and these are
very
fast,
slow,
scary Gorn. But yeah, I think that if you want to, I think what Trek movie said is if you need some head cannoning, that's the way to do it.
Yeah,
and I think that's fine. I was saying on our Incomparable Slack earlier that I also am choosing to believe that even though Arena sort of implies that Kirk doesn't know anything about the Gorn, I'm choosing to believe that Arena is more like. Or less like Balance of Terror, which is like, oh, we've never seen the Romulans before, or only heard their voices, and more like, I had it on the top of my head earlier. Well, anyway, the one with the Organians, can't remember it. Anyway, so it's like, well, you guys have been fighting for a long time, and now let's put a stop to it. And that's sort of what happens in Arena too, because a lot of those plots got recycled, and. And so, yeah, that's what I've chosen to believe, is that, yeah, the Gorn have been around a long time and they've caused trouble, and the Enterprise. And if you want to be like, well, technically Captain Kirk said that, he's like, oh, I don't know about this Gorn. Okay. Like, I forgive Strange New Worlds for trying to like just get something in there and not go back to the Klingons and, you know, like, just like, oh, the Gorn, we don't know almost anything about them. Let's use that little crack to open up some storytelling for Strange New Worlds. And I'm going to go with it, even though, yeah, arguably it doesn't quite match up with TOS. It's like, I'm okay with it. And yeah, it's an old Gorn. That's an old guy.
It's an old guy. It's fine.
The younger, yeah. The lieutenants on the Gorn ship would have just killed Captain Kirk. So that's why they didn't do it. They wanted it to be a fair fight. They're like, you're a kind of fat captain. That's very mean. The Metrons are mean and jerks. They shouldn't fat shame Captain Kirk because he's wearing just because he's got that other alternate shirt for later in the season. And then we'll take the Gorn captain, and it's a fair match.
It is a fair match. Captain. And I think it's fine. I mean, I think there's enough wiggle room where they could be like, you know, and I haven't watched Arena in a long time, so I don't know if Uhura says something like, I've never seen a Gorn before, because clearly she has. And Spock as well. But they maybe have never, maybe they're, if they are surprised at seeing it, maybe they're like, that's a Gorn.
Yeah. I've only seen the little babies. Like the,
yeah. And the kind of whatever, I guess they're not adolescents, but those babies grow very quickly.
Gorn captains let himself go.
I guess so. I will say the Gorn, one of the things people were wondering about is how successful will they be in turning kind of, you know, the man in a rubber suit into this terrifying thing that they keep talking about, right? Because I think Arena is an effective episode of Star Trek, but anyone watching it, even in the 60s, wouldn't be like, oh my goodness, that Gorn is terrifying.
Yeah.
It's kind of campy fun, and Kirk is in peril, but it's
He's scary more because he's relentless than anything else. Mm-hmm.
And he's slow, and you can't stop him. You throw a boulder at him, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
But I will say the Gorn in Strange New Worlds, very scary. They're quick. They want to bite you and drag you into the dark so they can eat your brains. Not your brains.
One of the things I like about this is what it essentially establishes is that these are horror movie monsters with spaceships.
With spaceships, yeah.
Right? I like that. They're like, you know, they're very intelligent. When they grow up, they fly spaceships. But right now, they're in the more like murder all of your siblings so that you can be the alpha part of their process. Right? Like, yes. I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's a lot of fun. And the fact that
they use other sentient beings as their breeding chambers, basically.
Super, and, right? Take a little page from Alien there. Yeah, I think I think it's really good. And this whole episode, their
biology is such that they cannot be picked up by scanners, and they have psychic shields. That's their
predator part, which is that they're not invisible, but they're like not scannable, and so you can't see them until scans, and then they appear. Lots of nice moments where Spock is like looking into vents and hearing rumbles around him, and you know, it's like, I don't know. I thought that was all great. I loved it. I loved it.
I did not get so Pike and Mbenga kind of sneak up on Spock when he is looking at a vent, and then they make fun of him. And I was like, come on, people should be on edge here. There are Gorn on this ship, and you snuck up on him.
Yeah. Well, at he that point, I don't know if they know that there are Gorn on the ship. I keep feeling like Spock should have said, I think there's something in the vents, but he doesn't. He's just like,
yeah, I don't remember.
Grumble, grumble, grumble. So that's true.
And I did like the scene where he has to. So they make a plan to get the Gorn to shepherd them to one particular part of the ship, and part of the plan is that they have to basically goad the Gorn into going where they want, and a Gorn will not back down from a challenge. So they have to go out and challenge him. Spock goes out and for some reason takes the alien's stick weapon with him instead of a phaser rifle. Mm. Interesting choice.
Lack of phasers on this mission. That's the thing that I really noticed is everybody really should have a phaser with them at all times.
Yeah.
Even in sick bay.
Yeah. It seemed kind of weird. And then they're on a Federation ship. So even if they didn't bring enough phasers, which seems like a poor planning, they have ready access to many phasers, one assumes, on this ship. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. And basically Spock is like, oh, it's not coming out. And they're all like, because you're super lame, get angry and do it. And I like that moment when he says, there is rage in my thoughts and I will let it into my heart. And then he gets very angry. And then he has trouble with his emotions later on, too. I liked all that.
Yeah.
Thumbs up to that. I also, my favorite moment, Jason, in this entire episode is when Captain Pike arrives on the bridge and he says, computer, shift, you know, give control of all systems to the bridge. Pike authorization 46810.
246810.
Yes. And Benga says, you haven't changed that yet. Yeah. And I thought, there you go.
I thought of you. I thought of you in that moment because we have talked greatly about terrible codes on Star Trek that are bad for security. And I thought that, again, them calling it out where Mbenga is like, you haven't changed that? I'm like, yeah, let's go. It's a classic.
Like, isn't that like the default give you?
Yeah. It's hand over all command codes, authorization Pike, P1KE 123. Come on.
Oh, come on, Captain Pike. You could do better.
Password one. Yeah.
They'll never guess.
They'll never figure it out. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10.
Mm-hmm. It's a pattern.
Yes.
I think this episode was really good and a really strong Uhura episode where she basically figures out what she wants to do. And you know, at the beginning of the season, she was kind of like, you know, I'm here. I don't really want to be in Starfleet, but I couldn't think of anything else to do. So I'm here. And I think by the end of this episode, she has learned that this is her place.
Yes.
Given her sage advice from Hemmer, which is basically, you know, you're afraid. You are really good at making connections, but you are afraid of them because it might lead to you getting hurt. And Hemmer says, guess what? It is going to lead you to getting hurt, but it is worth it because you gain much more than you lose. And then he, you know, jumps off the ship full of baby Gorn. But, you know.
Yeah. It's a little last words. Stay in Starfleet, he says as he falls to his death.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention, by the way, this episode is all this season brought to you by StrangeNewKeys.com.
Soothing. You need a soothing beverage after this episode.
New Mexico Tea Company. I love them and drink their tea all the time. And they've made 10 strange new teas that are all kind of like unique brews tied to the 10 episodes of Strange New Worlds. And although we have reached the end, you can go to strangenewteas.com and you could buy the sampler pack, which has the 10 strange new teas. You can also just buy any tea you want. There's some Earl Grey on there if you're more of a Picard guy or gal. I just was thinking Picard's a guy, so he likes Earl Grey. Try not to be sexist there. If you're a blue tea gal, well, the genuine jipper is for you.
Or guy.
So here's the story here. This week's tea is Kingdom of Absolution. It is assembled from ingredients found floating in the Jonisian Nebula. Okay. Ooh. Interesting choice to just like make a tea out of things found in a nebula. we can only guess what was going through the mind of the intelligence sprung forth from nothing when they conjured these ingredients into reality. So seeing what they're doing there? You see what they're doing there? Okay. So Mbenga's daughter made this tea for you, is essentially what I'm saying. And here is what it is. It's pu'er and green tea and black tea and chocolate pieces and raspberries and vanilla and other natural flavors. What does it taste like? Well, find out. It's Strange New Tea. You can check it out. StrangeNewTeas.com. We thank them for supporting us and for coming up with these amazing write-ups that tie into Strange New Worlds episodes.
Very nice.
I'm starting to wonder if next week's tea is going to be a Hemmer memorial tea. We'll see. Oh,
there's tea in that nebula. So that's a Voyager reference.
Acknowledged.
Haha. Although Captain Janeway, of course, famously coffee drinker, but
it kind of ruined the whole bit there
to these teas. It's Picard, which
Picard is our canonical tea drinker among Star Trek people. I don't know if we know. I think Pike's having a whiskey there at the end.
Oh yes, he's a whiskey drinker.
I think that's what's happening there at the end. Yeah.
Sisko is a Ractogino, I think, because everyone drinks Ractogino in Deep Space Nine. So.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know. I don't know if I would accept any drink endorsed by Klingons, but.
No blood wine for you.
And why do they think it's coffee? Why do they say it's coffee? I mean, it must be just like coffee, but actually made from ground up bugs or something. I mean, really.
Probably. Knowing Klingon cuisine. Well, that's probably not too far off.
Scott, I was looking at it. I think it's something like 26 weeks in a row or something. We've been doing this 25 weeks in a row. But next week will be our last Vulcan hello for a little while. Because it will be the final episode of season one of Strange New Worlds and the end of this incredibly long run of Discovery and Picard and Strange New Worlds. What an embarrassment of riches that we've gotten. But it's just about over and we'll get our Thursday nights back for a little while.
It's been a long road, Jason, getting from here to there.
Yeah, on the Thursday train or something. I don't know. Take the Thursday train to Thursday? Anyway, next week we'll do that, and then there's going to be a wrap up episode on the Incomparable about all three because we rolled them all together because there's so many,
too much Star Trek,
too
or not enough
much. I don't know, but it's an open question about what's going to happen the rest of the year. I think there are 10 more Prodigy episodes to go, and then there's another season of Lower Decks that's coming. So I think there'll be some animation in the fall. I also toward the end of the year, it actually wouldn't surprise me if we see something, but like, because Picard season 3 is out there and they've already shot it and I believe they're about to wrap season 2 of Strange New Worlds and they're shooting the next season of Discovery, so my guess is they'll go in that order, that it'll actually be Picard and then Strange New Worlds and then Discovery. But whether anything is here in 2022 or we have to wait until early next year, I guess remains to be seen.
I don't know. I would not be surprised if we see a season of Picard, but we'll find out.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. I mean, it would be like two seasons in one calendar year, but they shot it already, so it's right there. And failing that, you know, I think we'll come back and check in about the animated series a little bit. We're not going to do every episode because, again, we've established it's like, hey, it was funny. I got the references. And what more can you say? But yeah, so next week, big moment. I'm looking forward to it.
The season finale of Strange New Worlds. What will it bring?
Yes, and Vulcan Hello, really, kind of.
Oh, that's right. And there will be a shocking death on Vulcan Hello next episode.
Oh, no. And please join us and our special guest star, David J. Lore. He'll be fine. He's just getting promoted to lieutenant. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that's right. It's great. We're going to put his pip on at the beginning of the episode, and he'll be fine.
The best is yet to come, David.
Mm-hmm. Your star only shines brighter every moment.